Hey guys, this is Aaron Battine from Lightspeed Venture Partners. I'm here again with Jeremy Liu, one of my fellow brainiacs in the room, and we're here to talk about tokens and ICOs. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm a little scared, though.
Why is that?
You know, it seems like there's a new ICO every 10 minutes, and I don't even understand why many of these companies exist. In fact, they're not companies. Most of the time, they're just white papers. I find it all terrifying, and I find that some of the amounts of money that they're raising are really scary, too.
I think there's a lot of interesting stuff going on here, and it's worth digging into some of the details. But if you look at the history of sort of all internet technology, it always sort of started in an unsavory place. And that unsavoriness, if that's a word, gave it enough attention to get legitimate people to care.
What's the opposite of unsavory?
Legitimate?
I guess. What's the opposite of savory?
Sweet.
Tasty.
Tasty. Unsavory is maybe the wrong word, but things that we would not consider legitimate.
Well, let's start off by talking about what's an ICO, what's a token. I mean, it's useful to just sort of, I think, recap that a little bit.
Sure. So ICO stands for initial coin offering. Token is a unit of value.
So like a coin, right?
Like
tokens
a coin.
And coins are basically the same thing.
If you were going to buy a domain TLD in 2017, .coin would be a good one. There's a long history of people trying to build coins back to the Mastercoin and Colorcoin days, of trying to represent value in a cryptocurrency of a certain unit of value, like a coin. As Ethereum started to take off, a protocol or a specification called ERC-20 was created, which is a generic way to represent an application token. That instigated a set of folks who launched white papers of various forms to raise capital on the Ethereum network to start companies, essentially. Some would argue that the most successful initial use case of cryptocurrency is actually fundraising itself.
So let's peel this back a little bit. You know, coins and tokens are both essentially words for the same thing.
Correct.
Right? And they all live on a blockchain.
Correct.
And that's core to their coininess, right? Or tokenness. Is that they exist on a blockchain, either through proof of work or through consensus or through some other mechanism, but because there's a distributed ledger who determines who owns what and verifies that ownership and therefore the validity of a transaction.
Correct.
So that is what is core to being a coin or a token, is that there's a distributed ledger that tells you who owns what and that allows you to have transactions in a trustless environment. Like, I don't need to trust you to know that you have the entity.
Correct. The distributed blockchain is a database that represents all transactions in which cryptography proves it can be trusted, and it represents some unit of value through which a company raising or doing a token sale is creating some new application that is leveraging that token in order for it to work. So,
and a ton of these folks are basically piggybacking off of Ether and the mechanism that was established for that this is the ERC-20 standard.
Correct.
So the vast majority of the coins that we see are all following that standard because everybody understands how that works already.
Yeah, it's very easy for folks to understand. It's very easy to transfer currency into those tokens. The contracting languages and the representations. People are still cutting and pasting code. If you remember back to yahoo.com when you created your own website, aaron.com, now people are cutting and pasting smart contracts that represent these app tokens, and they're creating their own.
And that's why most of these ICOs are priced in Ether, because
correct.
They're mostly based on ERC-20.
Everything that's based on ERC-20 is priced in Ether, correct?
Right.
Correct.
Okay, so the way that most people are buying into an ICO today is they're either taking Bitcoin and buying Ether and then taking that Ether and buying into the ICO?
Well, there's a couple of different token sale platforms now. There's Token Hub, which the folks at Science recently used to do an ICO for their incubator. There is Filecoin, which used the CoinList platform, which is a sort of joint effort by Protocol Labs, the company up behind Filecoin, and Naval Ravikant and team at AngelList. On CoinList, for example, you can actually buy in fiat, so USD, and buy directly into the currency, or you could buy in a set of other cryptocurrencies to buy in.
And the right way to think about these is in much the same way that in an IPO, you're buying into the initial public offering of a stock, and ICO is the initial coin offering. So the first time that the public gets an opportunity to own a new coin, which is specified in a white paper?
That is mostly correct until you get into some new token agreements that have come out. Things like the SAFT, which is based on the YC SAFE, the SAFT, Simple Agreement for Future Tokens, which is modeled after the YC's Simple Agreement for Future Equity, in which how tokens are distributed is slightly new and different, but you are generally correct.
Right, right. And so it seems like there's been a it seems like right now, unlike in our business where, we're typically funding companies that have a team and a business plan and a product that's working and usually quite a lot of users, for most of these ICOs, they are being raised on the back of a white paper, which is sort of the technical component of a business plan.
Yeah, I mean, it's really no different than Color or Clinkle raising $40 million off a deck with a great team and awesome humans, but maybe not a lot of traction or software or users. So it's not like this is a new idea necessarily in the world of startups.
But there is a different norm though, right? Most startups today, if they're raising money from a venture capital firm, for example, will have a product in market and will
It depends
have
on
users.
The stage. Fair so enough. It really depends on the stage. When as an angel but, investor, well, well, I invested me, in a deck and a person,
but let me put
not
it this
a product.
Way. The most of the ICOs that are going out today are raising tens to hundreds of millions of dollars.
So that's a separate point we should touch on.
And most companies that would raise from venture capital, tens to hundreds of millions of dollars, would have more than, would have a product in, and would have users.
Yeah, I mean, today it is easier to raise a $100 million ICO than a $3 million seed round for certain types of founders and certain types of ideas. So that is true. But I want to separate the concept of raising capital in this way from the current amounts and that people are raising, because I think they're really two separate things.
Sure. So to get an ICO off the ground, you need to write a white paper. What does that usually look like?
It's usually math gibberish. I'm kidding mostly. It's usually a thesis on a certain industry. And there's a lot of different quality, like with entrepreneurs and like with startups, there's a lot of different qualities of offerings here. The more complex and the more advanced teams have, it looks closer to a math research paper than it does a traditional startup deck.
Right.
So right. There's often equations, some of which have proofs, some of which don't have proofs, which is an interesting point. There's often, you can find holes in the explanations for some of these things if you double click too deeply on some of these white papers. But it's generally a thesis of the world, somehow implemented by the use of a token. And often some sort of network effect business, often some decentralized business, often an attempt to disintermediate some other company in the world, or some censorship proof or censorship related business that needs a token to distribute content and or value globally, are kind of the general themes.
So the coin or the token actually has to be core to the way that this business will work, right?
I think this is an interesting question we should talk about. Like, what if you re-implemented Facebook today and you were going to start a similar company, would you start it on the blockchain? I think the best ideas and the ideas that folks should be looking at seriously do rely on some unique aspect of the blockchain or of the token economy in order to build a business. But there are things literally called the banana coin, and there is something called the shit coin. Those are both like real ICOs that occurred. Now, they didn't get very big. They got a lot of press. I think one is funding a banana farm somewhere in the Southeast Asia. I think shitcoin was a joke, but they both raised tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on their ICO day.
So,
but that again, that's probably not what we should talk about. Those will probably go away as the market matures. There was one called Nullcoin, which was one of my favorites. The white paper said, this coin doesn't work. This coin doesn't provide value. I plan to take the money and buy a car, is what the white paper said. And I think he still raised like $60,000 or $70,000. So I think the guy bought a car. It's going to happen at the beginning of the internet. So
you've got these tokens or coins. I guess these fall into sort of two categories, right? There are the ones where the token or the coin is sort of intrinsic to the value of the product. And then there are ones where the token or the coin kind of points to some outside value. It's sort of encodes a smart contract that gives you the right to something else. So for instance, this banana coin thing, the coin is not core to the way that a banana farm is going to work, but it gives you the right to, I don't know, bananas, I suppose.
Yeah, so you could probably think of them
profit from selling bananas.
Yeah, yeah. So a key distinction that folks talk about are securities coin and a utility coin. So a securities coin is probably like a share of a banana farm, where a utility coin is something like access to a Dropbox like service. Like Filecoin, for example, where I can spend the coin on some value on a network. If say Airbnb was built on top of a Airbnb coin, you would spend those coins to get access to a night at an apartment.
If we were trying to imagine sort of a real world metaphor for a utility coin, I mean, what would that be? I mean, are we talking about something like, you know, like at a casino?
It's chips at a casino. It's a casino. Literally.
Yeah, so that's like, it's core to the way that the actual function of gambling works is that you are taking, you exchange fiat dollars for those coins, but then within the ecosystem, chips are how you actually conduct the business of gambling.
The best examples are something like mobile games that have in-app currency. Mm-hmm. I don't like using the gambling metaphor, although investing in some of these ICOs is kind of like gambling. I don't want people to think it's all BS. I think there are potential use cases here that will increase in value.
So maybe like say frequent flyer points, is that another?
It's a little bit different. Well, I mean, maybe it's the same. So it's that's another in-app currency in the world.
Right, where the value is intrinsic to the frequent flyer point in this instance, right?
There are some details that matter in which American Airlines could print more points into perpetuity. So the value of a point does not increase based on the number of people who have points or the demand to buy airline tickets through points, right? So whether almost all of these app tokens are creating a fixed supply in the world, there are algorithms that define how the supply grows over time. And they often cap out after a certain number of years, like Bitcoin, for example, eventually caps out at 21. Filecoin, I think, caps out at 2 billion coins. So there has to be a fixed supply in order for demand to increase the value of a given token.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think about what's the best metaphor for someone to think about, you know, if they're not familiar with, you know,
casino tokens, in-app currency in mobile games, that kind of thing. But none of them have exactly the same characteristics, but they are close.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what worries you about some of these ICOs that are happening right now?
There are a few things. One is I'm fundamentally excited about the core technology. Mm-hmm. There is
I think we can all agree about that.
I want to say that up front because I don't want it to. I'm spending a lot of time looking at the space and understanding the technology, and I think there's a huge amount of potential in rethinking how money is transferred around the world and rethinking how value is distributed among networks. And I think that's really important. I think one of the challenges I have today are that there are many teams who are taking advantage of a moment in history and don't. May or may not have even a plan to build the software that they talk about in their white paper, but it's a great opportunity to raise money.
And so that's a good point, because a white paper is not a contract, right?
Yeah, there's not a lot of governance. Most of the most of the agreements that people sign, if any, to buy into an ICO or a token sale, give the team full power to do whatever they want with the capital that they received. And that is a little bit different than early stage startups typically.
Because there's no governance, right? Because there's no concept of like fiduciary duty or, you know, a board of directors.
Even prior to a board of directors, if you're angel investing or you're participating in a YC safe in an early stage company, there are some legal definitions in the agreement that define it's an upstanding company with the government and it's doing various things to in its best possible interest to do what it said it was going to do. There's not much of that today yet for most token sales.
And yet most ICOs, the money is actually being used to try to build, like make a good faith effort to build what they said they would do.
Absolutely.
Right. But then we've seen a bunch of examples where there are ICOs that have significant secondary components, meaning some of the money that's raised is going directly to the pockets of the developers as well.
Because there's so little precedent here, there are very few ICOs that are the same in how they're structured.
Mm-hmm.
Many are creating entities, legal entities in either Switzerland or Singapore, some as charitable foundations, most as attempts to sort of avoid U.S. SEC security/tax implications. Many are not permitting U.S. Citizens to participate. Many are structuring them so that there is a foundation that manages the money that's received. And then there's a separate organization that is the team of people that are building the thing. And the foundation over time gives money to the LLC or the corporation in order to fund the effort. Others are actually doing vesting. For example, with token sales that are based on the SAFT document, the Civil Agreement for Future Tokens, you don't necessarily get the token, or you actually do not get the tokens when you purchase them. You get them when the network goes live. You, in some cases, there's also a vesting agreement post-network go live that may actually have a discount associated with it when you purchase the tokens. So there's a lot of different structures that people are thinking about, and I don't know if we understand the best one yet.
So why are people buying into these ICOs? What's the motivation for...
I think there are many motivations depending on who's the buyer. There are some accredited investors who are investing in teams very similar to the way that early stage startup investing occurs today. But there's also quite a bit of crypto gambling is one word I heard recently, which is, listen, I've got a pot. I bought $500 of Bitcoin in 2011. It's now worth tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I'm sitting on a lot of house money. I want to diversify. I want to take some of my Bitcoin and put it into Ether. I want to put some of it in Litecoin, and I want to further diversify and put it into these coins because I don't know which one of them is going to go up or down, but I want some sort of diversification. I also don't necessarily want to convert it to fiat because then I might have some tax implications, and it's more sort of traceable in traditional money market systems. So if I take my 100K that I now spend $500 to get and I split it up among 20 different app coins or token sales, then I have sort of a better chance at keeping my money.
So you're saying that the primary motivation for people buying into ICOs is speculation. It's not actually because they want this thing to exist. It's not the, I mean, because a lot of people compare ICOs to crowdfunding, right? It's like, I really want, you know, a shoe with a pogo stick built into it, you know, to exist. And
yep.
So I'm going to pay it, you know, I'm going to buy it before it exists and crowdfund it so that now someone can go and build that thing. It sounds like you're saying that that's not a primary reason why people are buying into ICOs today. It's more speculative.
I think if you looked at CoinMarketCap, which is a site that lists the top, I think it's something like 5,000 or 6,000 tokens that have been for sale. I should look this up while we're chatting. Most of them are for speculation today. Mm-hmm. There's a few great teams that are actually working on innovative new platforms that we all may use in the future, but that is absolutely the minority today. But it's really no different than how the internet started. It was definitely non-obvious that we were going to have things like Google and Facebook and Uber one day when we were talking about the blink tag.
I think that's actually a really important point.
So we're kind of at the blink tag coin phase of ICOs.
I think that's a great analogy. If you look at many of the companies that got big in the first bubble in that 99-2000 time period, most of them, the average company disappeared, and was destroyed a lot of value in the process. But the ones that continued are companies like Amazon, Yahoo. I think was Google around in 99? I think it was. I think it was founded right around then. And those are the companies that went on to just, you know, literally change the world. Yeah.
So, you know, it's an interesting thing to think about when we look at companies who are raising money via these new mechanisms and or just using the core blockchain technology. We ask ourselves, or I ask myself, what if I was going to build this today and replace the word blockchain with database, is the company any different? Meaning, am I just using this as a way to store data, or does this technology give me a very clear advantage to build growth, a moat, network effects, build a user base in an unfair way? Or is the use of the blockchain orthogonal to the actual value that I'm going to create? So let's use an example. Let's pick on Facebook for a minute. Facebook originally, if you think about their history, started as a social network in colleges and kids and eventually adults, built really incredible targeted data on people, and built a daily engaged audience of over 1 billion people a day. They built this thing based on news and content and photos and people and their relationships. The blockchain could be used in the way that they make money, though. You could say that a new company could disintermediate Facebook as an ad company by building a token that represents how to target ads online. There's actually one that has already launched called Brave, or the Bat token, which is building a browser that has a wallet for every consumer that looks at web content, and advertisers can buy these coins to send them ads. So the core technology of the company could be built on the blockchain, meaning this advertising platform. There's a fixed number of FB ad coins in the world, and the demand to buy ads on FB increases, then the value of the token increases, just like everything else. But it's orthogonal to the value that FB created that gave them the right to build an app platform. So it's no longer, it's not sufficient to just say, I'm going to build tech on the blockchain. I have to actually create value in the world. And that may be directly proportional to the use of the blockchain, but it often, even in Google's example, in Facebook's example, in Airbnb's example, it wasn't the database they chose that made them build a great, meaningful company. It was something totally orthogonal that created value. And on top of that, then they leveraged some sort of core technology to do with this. So we have to make sure that we're looking at these companies in the right way, and there's some uniqueness to them that requires this tech. And that is the reason why they will win. And that hasn't been the case for most ICOs to date.
So you're saying that just because you can do something on the blockchain and you can create a coin or a token around it doesn't mean that you should. And in many instances, you actually should not.
You could and should, but it doesn't mean you'll win. I am fine for people testing and iterating these ideas on these new technologies, but that may not be sufficient to win. Right. And the real value is aggregated by the winners. And it's unclear if for many of these ideas, if the blockchain actually is the reason you win or helps you create the value that becomes the reason that you win. And that's the distinction I think matters a lot right now.
So for many ICOs, the coins behind them may not unseat the incumbent solution. And then there's a separate. So that's like, is it a good idea? And then separate from that, is the question, is it a good deal? So even if the solution could unseat the incumbent, you know, is the price at the ICO the right price for an investor to make money from?
Right. So some of these ICOs are raising sort of hundreds of millions of dollars. If you took the number of available coins in a year and multiplied it by sort of the last price someone paid for a token, these companies that have raised hundreds of millions of dollars are at billions of dollars of valuation, if you compare them to a traditional company, and they're at the stage of a pre-seed, pre-launch seed company. So should small teams of people with great ideas, without users, without traction, without software often, raise hundreds of millions of dollars at multi-billion dollar valuations. I don't know, Jeremy, you've been doing this for 20 years. Is that a good idea?
It depends on which perspective you're taking. If you are a developer and you feel like you are best positioned to determine how that money gets spent, then maybe that's great for you. As an investor, you might be less enthusiastic.
I think having too much money is not always a good thing, even on the startup side. I may or may not know something about that. It, you know, constraints drive creativity. And I do believe that the best teams who create the most value and learn the fastest and aggregate the users because they've built the best products sort of deserve the next phase of funding. And I'm a little worried that we're overfunding these things before the teams have shown they deserve it yet.
But like you said, that's the nature of the early days of any new revolution, right? I mean, that certainly happened in the internet space in the late 90s and early 2000s. A lot of stuff got overfunded, a lot of value got evaporated, and yet the things that survived, you know, created hundreds of billions of dollars worth of value.
There's a little bit of confirmation bias there because we found out about the things that won after they won, in a way. None of these companies, Bezos didn't raise $300 million when he was building a bookstore when he just drove west. Bezos, sorry if I mispronounced that. This has really never happened before. I don't think it's a bad thing that this is happening, because what I do believe is it will bring incredible developers and incredible founders to this space. And the next wave, some of the current wave and the next wave of companies will actually be incredible. But we have to get through this unsavoriness at the beginning to even find out if there's a market here.
Cool. Well, some other time, let's talk about the mechanics of these ICOs and whether they're complying with SEC regulations.
Awesome.
And so forth. But this was a good chat.
That was fun.
All right, man.
Go ICO. Thanks, guys.